1985, one of the most eventful seasons in Boston Celtics history, even though it ended with an historic loss. We're going to talk about this one year for this entire Thursday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millies, let's go! Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corrales of Mass Live here, thanking you once again for making this podcast part of your daily routine. I hope you are enjoying this walk through Celtics history. We started a couple of weeks ago, way back in the BAA, before the NBA happened. In the BAA, the Boston Celtics had their first taste of professional basketball. We started there. We got to Walter Brown, the first owner of the Boston Celtics. Red Auerbach, and from there, we get to here, 1985, and it starts with a trade that sets up another actual tragic milestone in Boston Celtics history. That starts in actually 1984, before we start the 84-85 season. The 1985 season is where Larry Bird had the lefty game. It's where Larry Bird egged on Kevin McHale, who set the team scoring record, and Bird subsequently broke the team scoring record. And it's the first time in 85 the Boston Celtics lose an NBA Finals at home. It's and the second time they ever lose an NBA Finals. This season is so chock full of things that this podcast is dedicated simply to the 1984-85 season. And in all honesty, we probably could do a podcast for each year if we really wanted to. But this season especially is worth doing just the one. So once again, Mike Dinan of RedsArmy.com and I begin our discussion of the 1980s. And we start with a move in 1984 that, according to Danny Ainge, is a brilliant move, even though it leads to what you'll hear it leads to. And then we're off for a discussion of one just wild season.
In October of 84, the Celtics and Jan Volk, the new general manager. So the first momentous thing is, Red Auerbach is no longer really in control of the franchise. He, even though he has influence over everything, Jan Volk comes in and is the general manager. And so this is the beginning of the transition of Red Auerbach away from his control. Anyway, Gerald Henderson gets traded to Seattle in October of 84 for a first round pick in 1986. That ends up becoming the Len Bias pick. So that's an important thing. That is a hell of a trade that, if it were not for a tragedy, that was, you take Gerald Henderson and you turn him into a pick that, at the moment, in the moment of that pick, you're picking one of the best players in college basketball. In 1986, you're coming off of a championship and you're adding a player at that level. But anyway, that's just, I want to throw that out there because that trade was made. So now we're into the 1984-85 season. And as you said, Mike, 85, Tragic Johnson gets his revenge and becomes Magic and beats the Celtics. Not only did the Celtics lose to the Lakers, unconscionable, they've never lost to the Lakers. They've also never lost a finals at home. And
that's true.
And Magic does that to them.
That's right. That was, it was, you know, eventually it had to happen, right?
Did it really, though?
The law of averages. That's my story. I'm going to stick to that. You know, it was very tough to keep that kind of thing going. In the NBA in general, in that era, you know, you had like, it went something like, I don't know, 20 years where no team repeated as champion.
Yeah.
From the time Bill Russell's last 2 years, Celtics won those two in a row. It didn't happen again until I think the Lakers did it 20 years later. And so it was rough for the Celtics to have to see that happen. But hey, you know, it just did. What can you say? There were a lot of things led up to that, though. You know, Max had hurt his knee and he had surgery, and he was not as effective when he came back as he had been. Mikhail became a starter. That season had the Larry Bird Julius Erving fight with the famous picture of two of them clutching each other's throat.
Hanging right here to my right on my wall.
You know, that game was an insane night. There was only two refs back then, and one of them was Jack Madden, and he got hurt early in the game. Somebody, I think, ran into him, and he hurt his knee, and he had to go out. He couldn't ref anymore after that. Dick Pivetta, who was, believe it or not, young at that time, he was the only ref left after that, so he refed like two-thirds of that game by himself. And the fight started in the third quarter. Bird had outscored Erving to that point 42-6. So what do you think Larry was probably saying to Julius? Again, Dr. J was kind of a proud man, and he probably didn't want to piss him off, and he reacted by starting that fight, and that was crazy. That was crazy. But there was a lot of crazy things that happened that season. There were two games where Larry hit the game winner at the buzzer, back-to-back games. They beat Portland by 1 point on a Sunday in Boston, and then on the Tuesday they played the Pistons in Hartford, which was in Connecticut, their alternate site that they used in that period. And Bird hit a runner from the baseline at the buzzer of that game, and they won by 1 point. So, and that was also the year that Mikhail scored 56, and then 9 days later, Bird scored 60, set the team record. So it was a wild season.
Yeah. So I want to bring all of this stuff up. This season alone is probably just one podcast. First of all, Hartford Civic Center. We got to explain to people what the Hartford Civic Center was, a quote unquote home game for the Boston Celtics. They played what, 3, 4, 5 games a year at the Hartford Civic Center?
Yeah.
I remember watching these.
Good arena. I went to it a couple of times. I went to games there. It was a good arena, but, you know, why did they do that? They did it over the years in different places. I mean, they used Providence, Rhode Island for a while, for a couple of games a year. I think it all stems from the fact that the Celtics never owned the Garden, at least not after the Walter Brown days. And so if they used an alternate site for some home games, they probably made some more money on it.
Mm-hmm. I remember Celtics preseason games at the Providence Civic Center. That was always fun. I'd go to one every once in a while. That was my chance to go see the Boston Celtics. I just remember watching these games at the Hartford Civic Center. I think I was watching them on Channel 56 from time to time. Gil Santos and Bob Cousy on the call. The 85-86 season, the Celtics lose one game at home that year. Let me back up. I'm in the wrong. 84-85.
Yeah, 84-85.
84-85 is the season that we're on. I'm jumping ahead. 84-85. The Celtics lose in the finals. They're a little shorthanded. You end up finding out that they need a little bit more help off the bench. But as you said prior to this, Kevin McHale in March 3rd, 1985, goes and hits for 56 points, and he comes out of the game, and Bird tells him, "You should have gone for 60." And 2 weeks later, Bird goes for 60, which is one of the more hilarious things that I've seen in the NBA. That these guys, that Bird's mentality is just like, no, go set the record. Like Bird would walk into places and be like, what's the record here in this building? He's just so hyper competitive. And part of like the McHale thing, part of why he and McHale, I don't want to say didn't like each other. They were fine, but they didn't always have the best relationship.
Bird, two different personalities.
Right. Bird was like the just win at all costs, do everything you can, and everything was geared towards winning. It's the next season where they have the Christmas Day game, but we'll get into where McHale didn't travel with the team. But McHale was just a little bit more gregarious. He's the guy that did cheers. He's the guy that, you know, had more fun. It was just two different personalities. So in that moment in March of 1985, McHale's just having this game. He comes out and Bird's like, nah, you shouldn't have done that. And then he proves it by putting up his 60 piece 2 weeks later.
We know this is a tough time. You're stuck inside. You want to go out to eat, but you can't. Nothing's open and you shouldn't, but you can still help some of these restaurants that are struggling and get some of that food that you want, that they make, that you like, by getting it delivered. And you can do that through the Postmates app. If you're like me, you think about food like all the time. I'm always thinking about what I'm going to eat. And if you think that's just words I'm reading, no, that's actually true. I'm constantly thinking about what I'm going to eat. So I love using Postmates because they deliver food from any restaurant that I can think of. It comes right to my door. Look, this is safe. They bring it to my door, they leave it out front, and then I can pick it up. I wash my hands and I'm good. I have the food from a restaurant that I like. I'm supporting a restaurant that I like. They're staying open. They're doing some sort of business. And I'm, through Postmates, getting myself some food to the door. It doesn't matter what it is. And it's not just about food. It's not just about my dinner. It's not just about that sushi or whatever. They make my life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. No more trips to the store for you. No more late night fast food runs. You don't have to worry about where you're going to get your lunch or your dinner. Download Postmates on iOS or Android. Find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LockedOnNBA. That's code LockedOnNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Just a factoid about that game. That was against Atlanta, the Hawks, but it was not played in Atlanta. It was played in your favorite city, New Orleans.
New Orleans, that's right.
because the Hawks did the same thing. They had alternate site games in New Orleans occasionally. So, and that game also was just reshown on NBC Sports Boston, and it was fun to watch because Bird just hit some ridiculous shots in the fourth quarter in particular. He just, everything he threw up went in. It was insane, including the one that didn't count. It was waved off by some ref who had no clue of, you know, no feeling for the moment of what he was seeing here. Bird is hitting everything, and he hits one falling off the court, literally, for three, and the ref waves it off because of a foul. He said that happened before the shot. Come on, man. It's the NBA. It's continuation. Larry's going for 60. You don't wave off a three-pointer, you know? But anyway.
You're not bitter at all about that.
I'm just, it's not bitterness. It's just like shock. Well, you know, don't you appreciate basketball? Come on, pal.
Yeah.
So.
that game was especially fun because that's the one where the Hawks are like falling over themselves on the bench.
Yes. Yes.
Bird is having this game and he's hitting shots that are so ridiculous. The Hawks are like celebrating it on the sidelines. And I think Fratello is coaching at this point.
Yeah.
And he's like also marveling, but he's like, you know, I have to find these guys for celebrating Larry Bird's shots on the sideline.
Yeah. They had no chance of stopping Bird that night. No chance. And the last hoop that he scored was right at the buzzer, too.
Now, we should note that the Celtics were kind of feeding him the ball a bit. Like, he... Oh,
definitely.
That was a, they made sure that he was going to get to 60. But I will also say that Bird, when McHale was going for his 56, he was feeding McHale the ball too. Like these guys are both thinking, you know, when you have it going, you got a heater going like this. Just feed it. Just keep pushing it. But, you know, we have our kind of fun, hey, this was, what a night that was. There was a slight, let's be honest, a slight kind of Devin Booker-ish kind of thing going on there. The Celtics were fouling and making sure that Bird got his opportunity to score his 60.
That's true, but let me defend that by saying the Celtics were winning and they were comfortably winning. And so they did some of that. They fouled a couple of times to get the ball back. And, Devin Booker, when he scored 70 in Boston, that was 3 or 4 years ago, his teammates were fouling too, but they were losing.
Yeah.
And they weren't fouling to try to stop the clock to maybe mount a rally. They were losing they were fouling just to get the ball back. And it was a different type of approach. So I don't fault the Celtics for doing what they did.
I'm just saying.
That you're trying to be fair, I know, but we're Celtics fans. So.
I will also note that going back to Kevin McHale scored 56 on March 3rd against the Pistons. On March 5th, Celtics at the Knicks, he scored 42. So in back-to-back games, or in consecutive games, he scored 98 points, which I believe is still the most a Celtic has scored in two consecutive games. Not that, you know, you can move the sliders on these things, but Larry Bird had 60, but then he had 31. But this stretch of Larry Bird was, I'm just going to read off the beginning of his March. As I'm scrolling through, let me go to February 14th. Valentine's Day 1985. Larry Bird scored 18 points. Okay, ho-hum. Listen to this stretch of scoring after that, this month that he had. 30, 33, 30, 40, 34, 45, 35, 34, 30, 20, 25, 32, 60, 31, 35, 48. Until March 20th, where he scored 13. That's an insane stretch of scoring from Larry Bird. And he's doing it by hitting 45, 54, 64% of his shots. He's the most threes that he hit in all of that was two. In all of that scoring, he never had a game with more than 2 3-pointers. That's just mind-boggling.
Yeah. he was the percentages. He was just a great shooter from anywhere. And then if you couldn't foul him because then he was a 90% free throw shooter. And that was, you know, 85 was the middle year of his 3 straight MVP awards. So, you know, he was at his peak right then. I mean, it's incredible what he did, all those numbers. But, you know, that's what he was doing at that point. He was that good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we should be clear. Yeah. It's my bad for not putting out all of those MVPs and all of that stuff. 83, 84. 84, 85, 85, 86. Three straight MVPs for Larry Bird. And in the previous three, he was the runner-up.
Yeah.
And then in the following, in 87, he was third. And in 88, he was second. So that is just a monster, monster stretch for Larry Bird. He was All-NBA, one of the All-NBA teams, 10 times. He was my favorite, really, of all of these. 3-time all defense.
Yeah, I know. He was slow.
But
he was a lot quicker than people gave him credit for.
But I will say, like, he's not going to be a one-on-one defender. Like, when we talk about all defense, you look at Marcus Smart and you say, that dude's an all-defensive player. Larry Bird, when he makes all defense, it's because he understands positioning and he's a really good rebounder. Like, people don't, they give Larry credit for all of the scoring and all of that stuff. He averaged 10 rebounds a game for the course of his career and almost 11 for a stretch there when he was winning those MVPs. He was up there. He did everything, stole the ball, blocks. He had, there was a case to be made for why he was on the all-defense team. We can make arguments also that mid-80s defense isn't exactly 2020 defense. But Bird wasn't like a sieve. When people talk about, well, Larry Bird wasn't the best defender, like, it's not like he was James Harden out there. He just was slower and he couldn't guard anybody one-on-one.
Yeah, I think the lack of floor spacing probably helped his defense. But he could play the team defense very well. And him being on the all defense 3 times, I don't think that was a gift. You know, he had his, he was good. He was disruptive on defense, even if he wasn't a man on man top defender.
So, okay. So, in 1985 here, we'll continue moving forward because we could talk about 1985 forever in this little stretch. The Celtics get to, you know, we go through the playoffs. They face the Lakers again. And in this finals, they unless you want to talk a little bit more about the run-up to the NBA finals here, because the Celtics also, you know, there's more than happened than just the finals.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
They did okay in earlier playoff rounds. I mean, they weren't threatened very much. They beat the Cavs at 3-1, beat the Pistons in 6. Pistons were not yet the bad boy Pistons. And they beat Philadelphia in 5. And Barkley was a rookie that year. But Philly was starting to fade away a little bit from what they had been before, the level that they had been, which was a legit contender every year. They were starting to ebb from that. But the word was this year, 85, that Bird got in a bar fight and injured his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that was obviously a problem as far as his shooting was concerned.
So much. I say it every time we talk about Larry Bird. I'm so happy Larry Bird didn't play in the Twitter era. Because so much, like the things that he said, some of the things that he did, the way he carried himself, the perception of Larry Bird would be vastly different, I believe, if he played in the Twitter era. And this is a good example. Who gets into a bar fight and breaks his hand or hurts his hand before the finals?
Yeah. Well, he could have been in a fight on the court, and then we wouldn't have thought twice about it. But, yeah, it's not a good look to get in a fight in a bar, especially during the playoffs. He didn't have very good judgment there.
No. So the Celtics face the Lakers, and this is the series that starts with, like, what do they call it? Like the Boston Massacre. Like this
the Memorial Day Massacre.
The Memorial Day Massacre. That is the Celtics win game one, 148-114. And that goes back to what you were saying about don't embarrass these guys. There's pride on the line. Much like the Celtics responded after game three in the 84 finals. The Lakers respond after getting destroyed in game one of the 85 finals.
Scott Wedman in that first game, coming off the bench again, he shot 11 for 11. And that was a day where nothing could go wrong for the Celtics and nothing could go right for the Lakers. But, yeah, you don't want to provoke them, get their attention. And the Lakers had several Hall of Famers, and they put their foot down and came back and won game two.
The most provoked, it feels like, was Kareem, because at that point he's 37, and people are like, Kareem, he's toast. He's done. In that Memorial Day Massacre game, I don't know what he had in that game, but all of the talk about Kareem being toast, he comes back with a 30-point, 17-rebound, 8-assist game two, and the Lakers win that one, stealing back home court and really setting the tone now for the rest of the series.
Yeah, and Kareem had to deal with the migraine headaches that affected him too. And I'm not positive, but I sort of remember that the game one, he had a migraine, and
yeah,
it affected him.
I found 12 points, 3 rebounds in that game.
Yeah.
So it was, you can see why people were saying he's toast.
He was
certainly not toast. He averaged in that series, 20, almost 26 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, a block and a half, a steal. He shot 60% from the field. And James Worthy, by the way, also had a monster series for the Lakers. The Celtics go to LA and get blown out in game three. They win game four, and then the Lakers win game five to come back to Boston up 3-2 to set up that game six.
Yeah, that was the first year. Well, first of all, game four in L.A. was won by Dennis Johnson on a jump shot at the buzzer. So that was dramatic, and the Celtics tied the series. And, you know, in previous years, they would have had game five in Boston because they always had the finals was 2-2-1-1-1 format. So game five would have been at the home of the team that had home court advantage. This was the first year that the NBA had changed the finals to the 2-3-2 format. So game five was in LA, and I think that hurt the Celtics badly. Gave the Lakers a chance to get their footing back, get their confidence back, playing at home, and they won that game five to take the 3-2 lead in the series. And, you know, I just think if that had been in Boston, that it might have gone more like the previous year, where it was 2-2, game five was in Boston, the Celtics won it, and went on to win in seven.
That 2-3-2 switch is a big deal, and I hated it. I hated it because it really does, I think, take away the home court advantage, where you still have four games at home versus the three the other team has, but coming back with if let's assume all the team the home team wins all of the games. You come back, the home court, the team with home court advantage comes home down in the series. Like, that's just, that never made sense to me. I understand because at this point, the Lakers were basically in every finals, and the cross-country travel was getting to be too much. And so they did the 2-3-2 to get past all of this. And remember, at this point, these guys are also flying commercial, so cross-country flights, it's not like they are now with charters and you could just do it. The cross-country travel was a bigger deal back then, and you had half the team back in coach. So it was – I understand it, but like nowadays we don't have that kind of obstacle. Let's see.
Yeah, and, you know, they did just recently change back to the 2-2-1-1-1. I forget when it was, a couple of years ago? They went back to the old way, so there's no more 2-3-2 in the finals because travel isn't much of an issue these days with the chartered planes. And, you know, the 2-3-2 was created a lot of pressure in different ways. The home team, the team with the home court advantage, has huge pressure now to win both first two games. Because if you don't, then you've got three straight road games, and that can be difficult. And then the flip side of that is the team that doesn't have home court advantage. It's very hard to win three straight games, even when you're playing at home on that finals level because of the competition factor.
Sure.
So that whole thing, I never liked it, and I'm glad they went back to the old way.
So the Lakers come back to Boston. They win game six. Kareem is the finals MVP, kind of shutting up a lot of people, all the people who said that he was washed. And the Lakers hand the Celtics their first loss at home, and their second. It's only their second loss in the NBA Finals at this point, right?
As a team, as a franchise.
Yes.
Yeah, they had lost all the way back in 1958 to the Hawks when Russell had a sprained ankle.
So this season ends with something that literally has never happened before. Never has a team celebrated a championship on the Boston Garden floor. This is just shocking. This is what's going on here? The Lakers won? The Lakers beat the Celtics? Even though they are the better team, and obviously because of how they won the series, they were the better team. And the Celtics addressed that. This now brings us to another big move that the Celtics make. Cedric Maxwell is out after this. Bill Walton is in. The 1986 Celtics are constructed, and one of the best teams ever constructed in NBA history is assembled. So we begin our next podcast, the Friday podcast, with the 1986 world champion Boston Celtics, a team that, unless you're Tommy Heinsohn, is considered one of the greatest teams in NBA history. So that's tomorrow. That's the Friday show. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed, because that's how you get all of these shows directly to your device. Do that. People who have subscribed, that five-star rating, that good written review is just something that I appreciate. I really encourage, because as I've said before, this is a free podcast. It's free daily, Monday through Friday. There's no other Celtics podcast that's doing this for you. And still, we're more than a month into this hiatus. We're almost 2 months into this hiatus. We haven't missed a day. Still going Monday through Friday, daily, for you. And the only payment I ask is a good written review and a five-star rating, because that is what keeps the Locked On Celtics podcast as the number one Boston Celtics podcast in the world. And I appreciate that you've done it. People who haven't, I encourage you to do it. It's extraordinarily helpful. So please do that and tell your friends that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.